Hello and welcome to the UK Gamers Podcast. Well, I'm going to be going straight into the news, and after the break I'll have a chat about retro gaming. So, first of all, what's been going on in the world of gaming? Right, well, let's start off with role-playing game news. Lots of bits and pieces going on there. AD&D continues to chug along quite nicely. Monster Manual 2 is now definitely out. Warhammer Fantasy and the new 40k based stuff seems to be doing okay, and Fantasy Flight Games is the place to go check that out, and that's something I might well do. I've very much wanted to have a decent 40k based role playing game for a while, and I've always thought a couple of genres would lend themselves quite well, and sure enough there's an Inquisitor and a Trader variant out there, and I'm going to have a look at that, but I think I'll resist because there's lots of other things for me to be tempted by, one of which, of course, is the Gumshoe engine, which I adore, and I've got quite a few bits and pieces for that now, one of which, of course, is the brand new Mutant City Blues, which you can definitely get hold of, I know, because, as I say, I've got a nice shiny copy here, and it is rather lovely, and you definitely want to have a look at the Pelgrane website. Lots of stuff there, adventures and books and so forth. Shadows Over Filmland is definitely available now, and any printing problems I think have been solved now. I got my nice shiny copy arrive at the same time as Mutant City Blues, so I'm quite pleased. But of course, when you're talking about Gumshoe, you're often thinking of Trail of Cthulhu, and that would lead you on to Call of Cthulhu. But before I do that, I just need to mention there was another game system that Pelgrane was involved with, and that was the Dynoth role-playing game. Now, sadly, the license for that has now finally ended. But for those of you who checked out their website, you would have noticed they had a little fire sale of their products, and that's proved so popular that they've actually had trouble fulfilling all the orders, stock running out. But also it's meant that there is the chance that a kind of limited license might be negotiated to give some form of support to the game, and I hope that happens. But obviously the game system is very excellent, and it'd be a shame to just drop it just because the license has run out. So various other genres have been looked at to kind of port across the engine to, and one of which has been suggested is the Babylon 5 universe, and I hope they do that because I love both the game system and that universe, and I can see that being quite a good fit. So something to keep an eye on, see what news is going on there. Now, back to Call of Cthulhu. A bit of a sale going on at Chaosm at the moment, I believe, so definitely go check out their website, you might be able to pick up a bargain. And if you were foolish enough not to buy Beyond the Mountains of Madness when it was available, you'll be pleased to hear that a PDF is now available for that. So if you didn't pick it up that time round, you definitely want to pick it up now. Right, when you're talking about Chaosm, that makes me think of RuneQuest, and RuneQuest makes me think of Glorantia. And these days, Glorantia means HeroQuest. Obviously, it did come out as Hero Wars originally, but it's now called HeroQuest. And HeroQuest 2 has been in the works for a while now, and it's looking like it's finally going to be available pretty soon. So I'm looking forward to that. Rather interestingly, the rulebook seems to have gone more for a multi-genre sort of idea for the game system, and I think that's a good move, because I've actually played most of my HeroQuest games in a non-Glorantia setting, and I think the game engine lends itself very well to porting across to anything, really. TV shows, films, you name it, very easy to knock up a game using the HeroQuest game engine. And HeroQuest 2, as I say, hopefully soon. Probably this year rather than in the next couple of weeks, though. Now, moving on from that, we've got the miniatures. Now, on the miniatures front, obviously Fantasy Flight Games have the rather excellent kind of English-speaking world rights to Wings of War, and they've done some previews as well of the World War II stuff. Now, I have heard about a deluxe set for the World War II game, and I'm hoping Fantasy Flight Games actually do pick that up. For some strange reason, they didn't decide to pick up the World War I deluxe set, so let's hope they don't make that same mistake for the Second World War, but it's looking rather nice, and you can see most of the figures that are going to be in Series 1, and basically it's your Spitfire, your Mitterschmitt, your Wildcat and your Zero, and there's various colour variants and so forth on that, and I might pick up the deluxe set. I'm probably going to try and avoid getting too excited by the miniatures, because I'd rather spend my money on the World War One version, but definitely keep your eye out on that, because news could happen at any stage on that front, and if it's anything like the normal Wings of War products, as soon as they're announced as available, they're out of stock. Talking about stuff that's announced and out of stock almost instantly, Advanced Squad Leader. Sadly, Multiman Publishing at the moment seems to be going through a bit of a most things out of stock phase, busily obviously trying to reprint anything that they can and work on getting reprints for the various other products that have been out of production for quite a while. I'm quite keen on Squad Leader at the moment. Had a few games of the starter kit and picked up a few bits and pieces for it as well. And rather excellent, but sadly, at the moment, hard to get hold of. Now, on the miniatures front, if you're into your Napoleonic stuff, you're obviously aware of the 28mm world, but obviously Warhammer Historical have brought out Trafalgar for your naval conflicts, and that means you can buy up all those rather lovely Napoleonic battleships that are available in various small scales, and that's something I'm desperately trying to avoid being tempted by at the moment. I have actually got a birthday coming up, so I've let the parents know that they want to spend a bit of money on me to go off to the various miniatures websites and buy me a bundle of the rule book and the miniatures, but something probably at some stage I will succumb and buy. But on the Napoleonic front, obviously Perry and Vitrix continue to churn out products, and all rather lovely, and some of the Perry stuff particularly nice, of course. And I'm always amazed at their stuff. I think it's probably the best stuff out there for a cost and quality basis. And obviously, they also do a lot of the Lord of the Rings stuff for GW. So GW, they've got lots of stuff coming along. For example, elves in plastic. So if you're into War of the Ring, it's going to be a bit cheaper to have your elves, hopefully. They've also got the up-and-coming Empire stuff coming out, including the steam tank, which will no doubt please my friend, because now he can get a steam tank fairly cheaply. Imperial Guard, well, that should be in your hands by now if you're into that. I haven't actually seen the figures yet. I've resisted going into the shop, but yeah, it's sounding good. 15mm and 20mm stuff, lots of stuff going on there. And when you talk about 20mm and 28mm, you have to consider HAT these days. They've got some nice stuff coming out in both scales all the time, and I've actually finally managed to see the 28mm LCID stuff, and it looks really nice and might be something for me to consider. I quite like playing Pig Wars, and we do a variant down at our club where we just have 20 people aside, and I can see a box or two, maybe, of the HAT stuff giving me a nice little 28mm army. But there is a problem with these figures. Although they're really nice, they're sort of proper 28mm. So they're, you know, properly proportioned. Okay, yeah, they're 28mm tall, but they're also a bit thin. And this might make them look a bit odd, stood right next to a more traditional, or more traditional these days, 28mm figure, because obviously the funky chunky heroic scale is what a lot of 28mm figures are, and I can see that being a bit of a problem for them. However, they are rather nice figures, and they're bound to be reasonably cheap, or rather very good value. Now, if you like your kind of 28mm stuff slightly on the thinner side, you might also want to check out EM4 miniatures. Lots of nice little bits of plastic and metal from them. They also do a good range of bases and dice as well, so definitely worth looking out for them. And I've actually managed to play some Combat Zone, which is a game system by them that's been around for quite a while now. And again, that's something else I might have to look at. Maybe a little box of plastic figures from them for quite cheap, and a couple of extra dice would suit me nicely. Now, talking about miniatures, I'm quite into the Ancients, and that brings up the subject of the Society of Ancients, and I do recommend you join them. The advantages are, obviously, you get their rather lovely Slingshot magazine, which with its new colour covers is rather excellent. There's also the opportunity to go to the battle days. Now, sadly, I wasn't able to go to the battle day, and I really wanted to, because it was a battle between the Romans and the Sassanids, and I actually collect Sassanid armies, and I'm just kicking myself that I wasn't able to get to that. And if you're interested in that, obviously go check out their website, but also maybe have a listen to the Meeples and Miniatures podcast. I believe he does briefly talk about the Society of Ancients in his most recent podcast. He also has started doing a little video review as well, and some of the figures I've talked about pop up in that, and I believe he's got two up on YouTube now, so definitely have a look at that. Now, that pretty much finishes off the miniatures for me, so I'm just going to briefly talk about board games. If you're into board games, you might want to have a look at the up-and-coming War Games Geek list that appeared on Board Games Geek. Lots of really, really nice stuff there, and lots of bits to tempt me, including Storm Europa, which I mentioned earlier. It's looking like a good year for your wargaming board gamer. Lots of nice stuff coming out. Well, talking about Board Game Geeks, I have actually set up a guild on Board Game Geek, so if you want to give me some feedback about the show or make requests or whatever, that's probably the best place to go to. So head over to Board Game Geek and let me know what you like, what you don't like, and we'll see what we can do for you. Now, I'm going to round off my news by talking about Margam Park. Now, if you don't know what Margam Park is, it's a park near Port Talbot in Wales. And at the recent bank holiday, at the beginning of May, they had a kind of history of warfare event. And I went to it last year, and it was pretty good, so I thought, oh, I'll go again. And this year was just excellent. Loads of people there, loads of demonstrations, loads of different reenactment groups. The army were there with some rather impressive kit, and it was a really good day out. The wind was a bit chilly, but luckily had good sunshine, so it was quite pleasant, and was there for most of the day. And the reenactors really do put a lot of effort into that. There was some odd little groups there. For example, there was a Spanish Civil War group, and that was rather interesting. They'd even gone to the effort of doing a bit of research to work out who from Port Talbot had actually gone off to the Spanish Civil War to fight. And they got a nice little website, which I'll try and put in the show notes, so you can go off and have a read about the Civil War. Now, what really impresses me about the show is the breadth of the reenactments there, and also the quality of some of their shows. Lots of World War II stuff there, which of course for me was particularly appealing because I'm a big fan of World War II. But there was also things like Saxons and Vikings there, and I like my ancients as well. Napoleonic, World War I, cowboys, Indians, loads of really good stuff. But in particular, the highlight to me was the World War II battle right at the end of the day. And that was rather magnificent, and they put quite a lot of effort into it this year. There was a Bren carrier, jeeps, a couple of armoured cars, a mortar, a sniper, a load of heavy machine guns, and it was very exciting and very loud. The mortar, I thought, was a nice little touch. They would drop the shell in the mortar tube, big puff of smoke, and then a big explosion when a load of mud went spraying everywhere. They'd actually put squibs in the ground, and it looked very dramatic and exciting. Obviously, if you're a bit of a spotter, I suppose you could pick holes in the odd bit here and there, but that'd be a bit churlish because they've worked very hard on it, made it very exciting, given you an idea of sort of the sights and sounds you might have in a World War II battle, and jolly good fun it was too, and I look forward to going back next year. And that's what I like. It's obviously been successful enough that it's going to be a fairly regular event by the sounds of it. So, really great guns there. And it reminds me of another excellent reenactment group I went to see a long time ago in Carew Castle in Pembrokeshire. A big tournament with horses and lancers and charging into each other, and excellent. So I'm in awe of the people who spend a lot of money and time doing this reenactment, and of course they're often very, very knowledgeable about the period they're reenacting, and quite happy to have a chat to you and let you put stuff on, you know, like suits of armour and helmets and wield the weapons and stuff. And they're often pose for you as well, and you can get some really great photos. So I've got about 8 gig of JPEGs now, where I just went a bit nuts taking pickies, and I've got to sort through them all now and work out which ones to keep, which ones to print, and which ones to delete. So congratulations to all the people involved in that, and if you're listening, thanks for a really entertaining day. Well, I think that's probably going to cover it for news, because I'd like to now talk about what I'm going to be discussing in the show, and that's retro gaming. And by retro gaming, I'm in particular talking about computing. I've decided that I need to talk a bit about computers, because I am, after all, a podcast about all things gaming, and I've spent most of my show so far really talking about board games, so I'm going to try and diverge a bit from them and talk about something else in the world of gaming. So after this break, I'll be back and talking about retro gaming.
Quick, shut that door, man.
As if that's going to stop it.
Look, it's not my fault the Elder Sign didn't work.
That's because it's shaped like a star.
No, it's shaped like a tree.
Star!
Tree!
Star! Well, it's too late now. We're the last ones.
What about Lady Hetherington?
She set on fire, then exploded.
And Father O'Leary?
He plucked out his own eyeballs and ate them.
Damn! I wish I'd visited Yogg-Sothoth.com more often.
Yogg-Sothoth.com?
Yes, you know, that Call of Cthulhu website. Jolly useful. It's got forums, news, even interviews with the great, and the undead.
Oh, I do wish you hadn't said that.
Oh, my lord! Stay away from me, you horror! No!
Well, you'll not take me! What? No! Please, no!
The Yogg Radio. A Cthulhu podcast from Yogg-Sothoth.com.
Hello and welcome back. When I'm talking about retro gaming, well, what do I mean by that? Well, basically, I guess you could say retro gaming is playing any game that's no longer in production or is no longer officially supported by anyone. So that does cover role-playing games, board games, war games, and computer games. Now, I'm going to mostly talk about the computery side of things, but obviously with role-playing games, for example, if you like D&D, which version of D&D do you like? I mean, you've got basic, you've got advanced, you've got the various versions of advanced, and I fall into the category of being a big fan of the first edition AD&D. Now, I know it's not necessarily the most fashionable version, but it's the version I like, and I've got a lot of stuff for it, including stuff I owned way back in 1981. So, you know, I'm happy with it, and I'll stick with it. It does have its foibles, but, you know, it's kind of gaming in its infancy and in the raw. And it's an excellent little product, and I really do enjoy it. With regard to fantasy, I also like RuneQuest, so I've still got the odd bits and pieces for RuneQuest too. But as I say, if you're used to the more modern role-playing systems, you might find some of these old-style ones a bit of a culture shock, slightly different way of gaming. And that's one of the advantages of them. It's nice to play different styles of gaming every now and then. Now, if you're into your role-playing games, you might also want to do some sci-fi, and lots of nice little games there. Obviously, for mass mayhem and giggles, you've got Paranoia, and also by the same company that brought you Paranoia, you've got the classic Traveller, and the Little Black Books is the best version, in my opinion, and rather luckily, you can actually get hold of that still, because it's available on PDFs direct from Mark Miller. So, you might want to look into that and pick up the entire back catalogue of Traveller, Traveller 2300 and Mega Traveller from FFE. They also do Twilight 2000 as well if you're into that post-apocalyptic sort of game. So definitely have a look at those. Well, that I think should cover your kind of your paper-based game systems quite nicely there. Board gaming, obviously, as long as you don't lose the bits, you should, with a bit of care, be able to play your board games for a very long time. So if it goes out of production, then it shouldn't be too much of a trouble for you. So board games and role-playing games, I think, are probably the easiest thing to get into for retro gaming. Obviously, if you don't actually own the products, buying them these days might cost you a fair packet if it's a particularly rare or desirable product. But there is another form of gaming, and that's computer-based gaming. Consoles, arcades, and computer systems. And that's what I think a lot of people would probably consider when thinking about retro gaming, and that's what I'm going to be talking about now. The first thing you need to consider with regard to gaming old systems and old games is, do you wish to go down one of three routes? First of all, you can buy the hardware and buy the original product, and that's going to be minimal hassle from the point of view, you know it's going to work, you're not going to have any weird funky issues going on. However, it potentially is expensive, and also you're running old kit and maybe old floppies or cartridges or whatever it happens to be, and therefore there is a risk of it blowing up and breaking, and you've basically wasted your money. So the other option is to go for an emulator. Now that's nice and easy. It's just a little bit of software that can be kept up to date, and as technology improvements can come along, they can improve the compatibility. And that's probably the biggest problem with emulators, is just how compatible are they with the machine that they're trying to emulate? How good a job have they done in the code at making it pretend to be this old system? Of course, it also raises the rather delicate issue of copyright and intellectual property and so forth. Now, a lot of stuff that's emulated. Shouldn't, strictly speaking, be an emulated because there's a copyright or intellectual patent or something like that on it. So that can be an issue you can run into. Also, okay, maybe the machine is emulated all perfectly legal, but your little virtual floppy disk on your hard disk is actually a dodgy copy of the original product, and that can be an issue as well. So emulation is a bit fraught with legality questions. So one way around that is obviously is to buy an official legal emulation, for example, on PC and Xbox and so on. You can actually buy arcade emulation discs, and it will be things like, you know, Midway Classics or Capcom Classics or something similar like that. And that's from the official current intellectual property holder, and you know you're running a perfectly legal copy, and also a working copy as well, because they would have tested it to make sure it all works nicely, and that might be a safer option. The other option, and an option that may or may not be to your taste, is to run like a modern interpretation of a classic game. And depending on how they've done it, if they've just basically updated it a bit to run on modern systems, it would be virtually the same as playing on the original system. So, for example, if you loved Elite on the BBC, you might want to consider Oolite, or Oolite, I guess, or FreeCiv. And these were products that I first came across running on Linux, but they are available for multiple platforms, and they play really well. If you're into kind of the Elite style of games, you might want to consider various other products out there, like Freelancer, which, although it's not a very modern Windows game, will run fine on Vista and XP. So, lots of nice little games like that out there. But when you're talking retro gaming, I think for a lot of people it is safer and easier to go down the emulation route. And as I say, that is a bit fraught with copyright and intellectual patent issues. But there are products out there that are all legal and above board, or in a sort of grey area where they're not strictly speaking illegal, but not strictly speaking 100% kosher either. Now, MAME is obviously a very fine product, emulates lots of different arcade systems, and there's various ROMs available for that quite freely, and no problems there. However, you can also get hold of, obviously, copies of arcade ROM boards, and as I say, that is a bit more of a tricky area. Strictly speaking, I believe on that front, it's all right for you to have a virtual ROM as long as you own the original arcade board. So that can be a bit of a tricky area, and a lot of people have gone down that route because some of these arcade boards can be quite pricey. So rather than run and wreck your original board, you buy the original board, you rip the ROM file off it, pop it onto your computer of choice, run in MAME, and away you go. And the emulation on that seems pretty good, and lots of different products run on that quite happily. Now, moving on from arcades, you've got the old classic computers like the BBC and the Spectrum and so forth. Now, the Spectrum is very well supported by the World of Spectrum website, and there's several tape files available on that website for products, all again quite legal and above board. And so, you know, you can play a lot of the classic back catalogue of Spectrum games. Now, the games I particularly enjoyed on the Spectrum were the Ultimate games, things like Lunar Lander and so on. I believe they are a bit harder to get hold of. So, you know, if you're into those games, be aware that not all the Spectrum catalogue is freely available. Now, if you're into Lunar Lander, you should be aware that it does exist on the Xbox in Arcade Live area. And I've tried the trial of it, and it plays very well and has very fine, sexy graphics. You know, that's one of those games that maybe you're better off going for a modern reinterpretation rather than playing the original. Another game system, or computer system, I should say, that's very well emulated is the Amiga. Now, originally, the Amiga was particularly hard to emulate because it had all the custom chips, but the emulating guys have worked hard at it, and you know, most of the time stuff will work. You do come across the odd problem bit, and there's quite often a workaround to it, but you know, there is still the odd bit out there that's not 100% happy with the emulator. But it's a very impressive product, and WinUAE is freely available. However, what's not freely available is the Amiga ROMs. Now, seems to be two ways, really, of going about that. First way is you can actually own an Amiga, and using some utilities, you can extract a ROM file image from it, copy it across to your computer, and away you go. But if that's a bit of a problem for you, you can always buy the Amiga Forever CD package, which will actually include the Amiga ROMs. Of course, slightly trickier is the subject of actually picking up the games. Now, again, several products were released free, several products were released but not actually, strictly speaking, meant to be released. And, of course, you can always actually go out and buy the original discs yourself. But just be aware that a lot of these discs are quite old, and some of them are in a custom format. And the problem I've got is I've actually bought a couple of games, and some of them have had bad discs. Well, if they were proper workbench-based discs, I could pop them into my actual Amiga and do a little repair utility on them and extract the files to my hard disk, and then from there get them onto my PC. However, if they're a non-standard disk, I've not really made much headway at trying to recover the data off the disk. So there is a problem there with buying old bits of kit. So you definitely, if you're going down the emulator route, want to pick up your games on ADF file format as quickly as possible. But as I say, you could run into problems with copyright there. But the WinUAE package is really, really good and emulates the Amiga pretty well. Obviously, if you're not running Windows, you're going to have to use an alternative version of the UAE engine, but I must say I do find the Windows version tends to be the fastest and most reliable out of the versions I've come across. If you're going to emulate a PC, you've got a bit more of a problem. The more modern the game, the more demanding it will be, and therefore the harder it's going to be to run. But there are several products out there to help you. There's DOSBox, which does a very good emulation of classic DOS-based machines. And I've managed to run quite a few DOS-based games quite successfully on that. But I have come across the odd one that just doesn't seem to work properly. And I guess it's a question of fiddling around with the sound card and video options to try and get it working. And I have had a few games that actually start but then crash. So it's not perfect, but it does a pretty good job. And I've played through a substantial part of Shadow of the Comet, for example, without too much trouble. Wine and Virtual PC and other packages like that will help you emulate Windows and allow you to run some of the Windows-based games. But Windows-based games often run using DirectX, and the support can be a bit hit and miss on that. So you probably need to check on the Wine website, for example, as to which games will and won't run in Wine. Virtual PC, I have had some success running games on that, but I've had more success running Wine on Linux, ironically. But there is another way of doing things. If, like me, you were really into the LucasArts point-and-click adventure games, you don't actually need to emulate your computer at all. All you need to emulate is the Scum engine. And there's an excellent product out there called ScumVM, which will allow you to do just that. And that's probably my top pick of all the retro gaming things you might want to try. It's get yourself a copy of ScumVM. Works on many, many platforms. And I've yet to come across a Scum game that it doesn't work with, and rather interestingly, it will actually work with more than just LucasArts games. It will run with several other products, and in fact, you can actually get hold of Beneath the Steel Sky and Flight of the Amazon Queen for free. So there's two games right away that you're going to be able to play with no trouble. But if you've got a copy of LucasArts CDs kicking around, never designed to run with Linux, well, just fire up ScumVM. Having copied your files off the CD and into a folder, and away you go, and you're playing Monkey Island or The Dig or Full Throttle or Day of the Tentacle or Fate of Atlantis, or one of those classic adventure games. And okay, yeah, the graphics aren't the best, but the sound quality on the CD versions is brilliant because it's all voice acted. And, you know, the storylines are intriguing, the puzzles are fiendish, and the humour often is actually quite good. But as I say, one of the biggest problems there is getting actually hold of the LucasArts discs. It's something well worth doing. Now, if you go out and buy, for example, a box set of Broken Sword 1 and 2, you might be intrigued to discover that you don't actually get the game files as such in there. What you actually get is a copy of ScumVM with the game files legally bundled in. And being a fairly late-on version of the point-and-click adventures, the graphics are very nice, and it's an excellent little game. The other game you definitely want to try out is Sam & Max Hit the Road. Now, the puzzles on that I found particularly fiendish and bizarre, but it's very funny and a really good game, and definitely worthwhile playing through. But I just can't believe that it's a game kind of uh, genre that's died the death, really. Even today, it looks good, it sounds good, and it plays really well. And with a bit of tweaking, you can make the graphics look really nice, particularly if you run it in a windowed mode. Full screen on a big 20-inch monitor, it's a bit blocky, but it was designed back in the days of DOS, most of these games. Now, if you're into the point-and-click stuff, you might also want to, for example, check out Gabriel Knight. Now, Gabriel Knight sadly doesn't seem to work with ScumVM, being a Sierra game, but it does run on DOSBox. I haven't had as much success running it in Windows, but then again, I do recall running it in Windows 3 and having all sorts of trouble with some zombies you'll meet fairly late in the game. I had no such problems in the DOS version, so using DOSBox, I've actually had quite a bit of success running some of the Sierra point-and-click adventures. But there are other ways of playing some of the Sierra adventures, and they're definitely worth looking into, because obviously you've got a great range of products there. Now, if you like gaming on the move, you'll be pleased to hear that you can actually do a lot of retro gaming on handhelds these days, and there's various options out there, but in particular, you might be intrigued by a system called the GP2X, and that seems to specialise in lots of emulation. And it's got a really good emulator, for example, for the Sega Mega Drive, a pretty good one for the SNES as well. It will run Neo Geo games, it will run Amiga stuff, it will run Quake, Urquhart Masters, which is a kind of Star Control game. It will run Ultima, and a whole load of other stuff. And all I can say is, these old games running on a small little handheld do look pretty good. The LCD screen is pretty good quality, but these old games running on a small little LCD, you don't notice that the graphics aren't the best. And you can have hours of fun, and of course you just can't beat playing, King of the Fighters on your little handheld, or one of the ScumVM games. And of course, that's the other thing, ScumVM does actually work on the GP2X, so you can play Sam & Max Hits the Road whilst you hit the road. So lots of little products out there, and definitely worth looking into. But if you decide to go down the actual physical hardware route, that's where you are going to have problems, as I say. For a start, some of these things can be quite big, they can be quite old and therefore a bit unreliable. Cartridges are probably your safest bet. They tend not to wear out quite the same way as other options. ROM boards for arcade games, obviously, they're fairly robust if looked after. However, the cabinets for the arcade games can disintegrate, and it can be very expensive to get a full-on gaming cabinet up and running. So some people don't bother. You just have a joystick, a little circuit board that you plug your game into, and then you just hook it up to a normal telly. So that is another option if you want to play classic arcade games. But I tend to find the arcade game route quite expensive. So you might be better off sticking with the home consoles. Obviously, with the home computers, the Amiga is fairly easy to get hold of and fairly cheap. But, of course, being floppy disk-based does have problems. Older systems like the BBC and the Spectrum, I would tend to avoid myself. The BBC is fairly robust, but unless you've got a floppy disk-based one, you're going to be relying on tapes like the Spectrum, and old tapes, not a good idea, really. For tape-based systems, I definitely would shy away from the actual hardware. Obviously, if you want to avoid any legality issues, you might well need to buy these old bits of kit. And for games consoles, you should have the original kit, or you're going to be in trouble. Now, talking about old systems, which games do I recommend? Well, on the games console front, I was a big fan of the SNES, and my favourite games on that were Mario Kart and Bomberman, and they were really great games, and I'm pretty sure I've got a SNES kicking around somewhere. Unfortunately, in my move, I seem to have misplaced it, so a bit concerned about what's happened to it, but even today, I'd love to fire up and have a nice four-player game of Bomberman. Absolutely excellent. But as I say, if you don't have a SNES, check out on Xbox Live Bomberman. It's very, very good. Moving on from that, Nintendo had the N64, and my all-time favourite game on that has to be GoldenEye. Four-player mayhem shooting is absolutely brilliant. The campaign game is pacey and well thought out. And okay, yeah, the graphics are showing their age a bit today, but for their time, They were good enough, and they had lovely animation, lots of little things like, you know, shoot someone in the leg and they kind of grab hold of his backside and hop around, and excellent fun. Sega, not so keen on the Mega Drive, a couple of good games on that, but I was quite keen on some of the games that came out on the Sega CD. And in particular, there's a game I'd never really heard of till fairly recently called Snatchers. And that's a really nice little kind of adventure-y, arcade-y game. And I definitely think you should check out the Sega. As I say, I was a bit more of a SNES fan myself. But the next generation of Sega stuff I was impressed by, the Saturn and the Dreamcast. Now, on the Saturn, lots of really nice games on there. Knights was a game I particularly enjoyed, and that's recently been re-released on the Wii. It's quite good, but I think that the original version is better. Also, the first version of Sega Rally, which I remember having all sorts of fun, scrawling around on mud there. You also had the Virtua Fighter games, and just lovely little product. Sadly, didn't do so well, so they moved on to the Dreamcast. And I think some of the games on the Dreamcast, even today, are excellent. Soul Calibur, the graphics standard on that is pretty good. NFL 2K, again, another game with great graphics and all sorts of nice fun stuff there. But before that came out, there was the 3DO. And the 3DO was, again, a nice little idea. Unfortunately, a bit expensive and didn't quite take off, but the 3DO had some nice games on it. Road Rash, the motorbike game, I thought was particularly good on the 3DO, much better than some of the other versions that are out there. I also really enjoyed the Need for Speed. That was a really good game, and in many ways I still prefer the 3DO version of Need for Speed compared to a lot of the more modern versions. Having said that, I haven't really had a go at the most recent version on Xbox, so I might have to change my tune. But if you want to play Need for Speed, you might want to look at the 3DO version. And if I recall correctly, they also had a very good version of Wing Commander on the 3DO, and also a nice quirky little game called Return Fire, which was quite good fun, a little kind of battle game with helicopters and tanks and so on. Moving away from the games consoles, you've got your more arcadey systems, and obviously there's various options there, but there was a kind of arcade system you could have in your home as a console, and that was called the Neo Geo. And that's a really excellent product, and lots of good games for that, particularly if you're into your kind of 2D beat-em-up. And I particularly like Samurai Showdown, so that's my pick for the Neo Geo. There was a more modern game, whose name escapes me sadly now, which had very impressive graphics, great big sprites, and that's definitely worth looking out for. And if I can remember the name of it, I'll try and post it in the show notes. Home computers, obviously, a lot of people picked up their home computer to do their homework, and of course spent most of their time actually playing games on it. I know I did. The Spectrum, with its lovely rubbery keyboard, lots of good stuff in there. Ultimate, as I say earlier, were particularly good at bringing out stuff. And I also liked The Lords of Midnight, a little kind of adventure-y game. That was good fun. And, of course, the classic Hobbit is definitely worth giving a go, although don't say Kill Bilbo when you get frustrated in the Dungeon of the Elves, because you might actually succeed like I did. So I have no idea how Bilbo managed to actually kill Gandalf, but there you go, it happened. There you go. So the Amiga, probably the best home computer ever produced back in the 80s. I know people are fans of Atari and so forth will disagree with me, but it was way ahead of its time, and really, rather than using Windows or Linux or any of that, we should all be using the Amiga, but it wasn't to be, but there you go, and they didn't develop it to keep it up to date quite fast enough. So, sadly, it's a dead system, but that means you can mine its classic game collection. There's almost too many games to talk about. I guess a lot of people think of Sensible Soccer, Speedball, Deluxe, and you know, the Bitmap Brothers and Psygnosis and all those great companies. There was also the rather excellent Rainbow Islands and New Zealand Story, are kind of arcade ports as well. But my favourite game maker on the Amiga was probably Cinemaware, and in particular I really enjoyed their game Wings. And for those of you in the know, Wings, of course, is the World War I combat simulator, and it's actually what got me into World War One in the first place, and hence my love affair with Wings of War. The graphics, obviously, very primitive 3D by today's standard, but you also had some nice little animated sprite graphic-based sections where you were shooting up Germans or taking out a train or bombing buildings, and it had a nice little storyline running along through it, and definitely worthwhile picking up. And what's great is you can buy yourself Amiga Forever and have a nice legal copy of an Amiga, and also you can then go to the cinema's website and download not all, but quite a few of their products, all legally above board, and play some classic Amiga gaming action. So that's definitely something I would recommend you go and try. On the PC front, obviously, massive catalogue of games there. ScumVM, obviously, is the best option of all. DOSBox for your DOS games, and then maybe Wine for some of your more modern games. Probably a bit trickier in places to get stuff working there, because being a slightly more modern system and with all sorts of various funkiness going on, you may come across a bit more problems there. But definitely a whole host of options there. Well, I know I've kind of really only scratched the surface and not gone into any great detail about any particular aspect of retro gaming, but I hope that's kind of intrigued you, maybe made you think, yeah, I need to go out and check these things out. And just remember, just because it's out of print or no longer loved by someone doesn't mean you can't love it. And as I say, a lot of these games are absolute classics, and it's a shame that people haven't experienced them or come across them. But the good news is you can with emulators, or by picking up an old copy of the original product. Just make sure you're on the right side of the law, obviously. Don't want to get yourselves in any trouble there. And I hope you give it a go. Obviously, role-playing and board games are a bit easier. Just, you know, pick up the copy or pick up a PDF, and away you go. Anyway, I think that's going to do for now. And as I say, I hope that's intrigued you, and I hope you've enjoyed listening to what I've got to say. Check out the show notes. There'll be a few links in there for various bits I've talked about. And I'll see you next time. So till then, goodbye and good gaming.